Welcome to episode 101 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we don't just seek to highlight the glories of ratings gains, which are great. I've done them. But we also dive into the plateaus and the pits of despair below that, which I am in currently. So I've had both ends of this. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donna Rich Burgess, Brandon Halsey, David Schreiber, Lindsay Newhall, Jeff Peterson, and Tobias Rex. If you want to get merch, someone just recently bought a mug and told me I had to split the proceeds with my daughter. So that's unfair, but I guess she gets a Pokemon pack or something. We'll have to figure out how to split the proceeds. Should be exciting for her. I have been streaming quite a bit on Dr. Skull _ Tiny Grimes. Just today, I was doing Think Like a Super GM and trying to get those puzzles right, prepping for my tournament game tonight. That's right, Oscar. I was prepping for you on stream if you listen to this. And if you want to appear on the show, you can fill out the Google form in the show notes. And if you're interested in Noel Studer's next level training program, you can use the code in the show notes below. That will also support the show. And you know what we haven't been getting lately? I'm just going to say it's been a while. You could go on like Apple Podcasts and review the show if you like it. If you hate it, you don't have to review it. It's fine. You can just hate it in your own mind. It's cool. But if you do like it, you know, a nice review might be nice. Now, it's time for what we're all here for, our guests. And this week, I bring you Elena. She is a Twitch streamer. She's coming off her first big chess tournament where she streamed it. She streamed interviews with her opponents. So I'm very curious to hear what her journey has been like, how that tournament experience was. And welcome to the show, Elena. And have you played any chess yet today?
Thank you. I have not. I barely was able to get up today. So basically just starting my day like an hour ago, but I will be playing some chess later on. I'm working on getting to 1600 on chess.com right now, and I'm very close. So I'll be working towards that.
And when you say working towards getting to 1600, what does that mean? What kind of time control are we talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about rapid. So I mostly right now play 30-minute games because I find it very difficult to improve playing Blitz as a newer player since I just started about 11 months ago now. And I found that with rapid, it gives me just more time to think and come up with tactics as well and work on the long-term strategy and something I can't really do with Blitz personally. So I mostly just stick to Rapid right now.
Okay, that makes sense. And when you stream, are you streaming 30-0 games?
I am. Yeah, I'm one of the few streamers who does Rapid games, surprisingly, yeah.
Yeah, certainly 30-0, right? I've seen like some 10-0, maybe some 15-10, but 30-0, that's a very long game. Wow, okay.
Yeah, a lot of people come in and they're like, how do you do this? It's so long. And I'm just like, honestly, I think this is what's required to get better, you know? And it gives me so much more time to think. And yeah. I don't know how people do Blitz personally. So I have the same question to ask right back at them. How do you do Blitz? It's so fast. I can't keep up with it.
Yeah. For me, when I'm streaming, I tend to do Blitz and boy, it tanks my rating hard because I'm already not good at Blitz. Like Rapid is my time control. And then I'm trying to talk about this game and it really limits my ability. So I like that idea. Like if your audience is there for it, that sounds like an amazing thing.
For sure. We kind of have a niche going on, definitely. And a lot of people like or enjoy watching those longer games because they can also think about the moves. So I don't know. It works out.
Yeah, that's cool. Then do you analyze your games afterwards or you just kind of run back 30-minute games?
Mm-hmm. I do analyze my games, especially if it's a game where it went south out of nowhere, like, you know, one move that I could have done better. I'll definitely analyze those. I try to analyze most of my games at least briefly or just quickly as well. But, you know, it could be rough at times, too, especially when you had a very annoying game to go back and analyze those games because you're emotional. Let's be honest. So it can be difficult for me. I mean, just the other day, I had a game where I was up 2 points and I was completely winning. But because I was low on time, and yes, this was a 30-minute game, and I still managed to get low on time, I completely blundered and ended up losing the game. And I did not want to analyze that game because, of course, like when you lose a game because of a blunder that was caused by something else besides your own decision. Like, you know, because I wouldn't have made that decision if I had more time, right? I hate having to go through those games, but I think it's probably still good to go through them. But, you know, emotionally speaking, I'm not thinking about like going through them, especially knowing that, you know, I did that because of the time situation.
Yeah, gotcha. So you're saying it can be hard to analyze when not only is there a blunder, but it's a blunder you feel like, yeah, when you do the analysis, you're like, yes, I know I wouldn't have done that had I had more
time. Yeah.
That's how I often feel about end games, even in classical tournaments. I found just more and more end games end up being time scrambles. And it's so frustrating because end games are so fun and interesting. And you're like, can we just set the clocks back to like an hour and like treat this like a study? And then instead it's like, you have 30 seconds to do 80 moves of an end game.
Exactly. Like, and the end game, well, the games that reach end game during the Chess Festival tournament, they were situations like that. It seemed like most of my end games, I pushed for them when the time was low. So then I had to blitz it out, basically. It was very fast. Did not have time to sit there and think about it.
Okay. Well, let's turn the clock back and we'll work our way forward. Let's start with your background. Did you play chess at all as a child? Did you pick it up for the first time recently? I know you said you've only been playing about 11 months. What's your story here?
Yeah, I actually had no idea how to play chess for the longest time. And I learned, I think, at a Christmas party at the end of 2021, I believe. And that's when I learned how to move the pieces, and that's about it. So that was my first time ever playing it. And then I just kind of like got back around to it when I stream, because a lot of my audience play chess. And for some reason, for some whatever reason, they play chess, even though I was at that time a just chatting streamer. So I'm like, okay, like, let me give it a try. Let me just play it on stream and see how that goes. And that kind of actually is what got me into it. And because a lot of people just seem to enjoy it, I thought, hey, why not just try this out and see how it goes? So that's exactly what I did. And I think after a few months, I myself really got into chess. I really enjoyed it because I do love strategy games a lot. And so I decided, hey, if I'm going to invest a lot of time into this, I should invest in getting better as well, because I'm not a very competitive person. So I don't like playing games just casually a lot of times, even if they're fun, right?
Yeah.
Because it's to me, my mindset is, if I'm going to invest a lot of time in something, I should get good at it. Otherwise, what am I doing, right? I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me time-wise. So that's exactly what I did. And that's also kind of how I got into doing tournaments as well, to just test my skills over the board. Nice. So it's been very interesting so far.
Okay. Well, so I guess we'll start here. You pick up chess. You're pretty new. What kind of rating are we looking at as we're starting out?
I started out, I think, around 400 11 months ago.
And you started out about 400 and you're just playing. And then you decide, I don't want to get better. What did you decide to do to try to get better?
Oh man, I did a lot. So I mean, I started off with Endgame actually. So because I would watch videos of these, you know, great players, and you know, see what they recommend. So I remember watching like Ben Feingold, and he was discussing getting better, and he was just like, "Don't blunder," you know. A lot of players under a certain rating will just blunder. And that was actually my first step in getting better. It was investing the time to just be aware of everything going on in the on the board, rather than just focusing on tactics or different openings or even endgame, I think, at that point. So the first thing I did when I started was I focused on making sure all my pieces were defended. And surprisingly enough, that got me, I think, to like 1,000 very quickly from 400. So,
every move, you just kind of scan the board and be like, are all my pieces defended once or twice if they need to be defended twice?
Yeah, exactly. And what I did was I focused on just one opening for white and one opening for black at first. So I wasn't worried about my openings. I played the Italian game and the French defense, and I stick with that. Nice. In the beginning. Yeah, and that's exactly what I did. I just scanned the board and made sure all my pieces were constantly defended. And I have a lot of new players coming into my stream and ask me, you know, how do you get to this rating? They're like, I'm 800. I've been stuck there. And I always tell them, I'm just like, you're probably focusing on the wrong things when you should be focusing on just getting comfortable with the board to where you can see all your pieces and you're aware which pieces are defended, which are not. And so I think that once again, that is really what just helped me get better. At least get to 1,000, 1,100. And then I kind of went from there. I started studying endgame as well after that, because I would also hear about simplifying, since it's hard to calculate when you're still very new. And so I would simplify, and I'm just like, okay, well, what do you get when you simplify, right? You get endgame. So I should learn endgame first, because you have the least amount of pieces in endgame, and you're mostly focusing on your pawns, maybe your queens, and or your rooks. So I remember I bought the book Silman's Endgame Theory, I think, or I think Silman's Endgame book.
Yeah, Silman's Complete Endgame Course, I believe it's called.
Yeah, Silman's Complete Endgame Course, and I went through that. You know, I learned the basic checkmates endgame as well, like rook and king, and after that is when I really got into tactics. So I think it was around 1400 I actually started getting into tactics. And,
oh, wow. Yeah, okay, well, let's stop for a second. So you're saying you're going to claim that by just focusing on your pieces being defended, you stopped blundering your pieces?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was
I think you should write
that,
a book where you just say
one
that.
One day, maybe, yeah. But it was really as simple as that. Just make sure all your pieces, whenever you make a move, you're not leaving another piece hanging, because it's so easy to get yourself in trouble like that as a new player. Maybe once you're intermediate, it's different, you know, because now I could get away with not having my pieces all the time defended, because I'm aware of everything around what's going on, because I can see the board better now. But when you first start off, it's really difficult to see the board well.
Yeah, because I feel like this is the biggest hurdle for newer players, right? Is like they can read a strategy book, they can read tactics books, they're playing a great game, and then their knight is just sitting there and you pluck it off and they're like, oh, my
knight. Yeah, and then everything falls apart, right? So it's like skipping the fundamentals to move on to more complex things when you should be focusing on the fundamentals and building that solid foundation, right, for your gameplay as well, which you can't really do if you're leaving a piece blundering, even if you have a great tactic, because all of a sudden everything just falls apart. So
yeah. Okay, so did you do anything special to practice this, or is it just like I played games and I constantly was looking at my pieces?
So when you talk about practicing this, do you mean just practicing defending pieces?
Yeah, like practicing this idea of making sure all your pieces are defended. Are you like doing tactics puzzles based on that, or are you just playing games and thinking about that?
For that, I just play games. I mean, I think I went up to 1,000 within a month from just 400, or so. I know it was a very quick, like, it was very fast, and it was literally just focusing on not blundering. That's it. There's nothing more to it, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. So you get to gain 600 points right now, listener, by just focusing on protecting your pieces. Does this count if you're at 2,200 already? I say yes.
Funny. 2,200. Yeah, okay. I don't know about that.
Okay, maybe not yet. All right, so you get to 1,000. Then you decide it's time to pick up Silman's Complete Endgame Course. You said you read it. Did you mean you read the sections for your rating, or did you actually go through that whole giant tome?
I have not finished the whole book yet. I actually just kind of went through, skimmed the book and went through what I felt like I needed to learn at that time. And so I'm not actually done with the book yet. I did that, and then I watched Endgame videos as well. And I think chess.com, I went through some lessons for Endgame on there as well. But surprisingly, the end game has helped me so much in my first over the board tournament, because a lot of people, beginners, they don't study end game. So it's very easy to win your games. Very easy to win your games against beginners if you practice end game. Yeah.
I went through a similar phase. At 1,000, I learned what opposition was.
Okay.
And no one at 1,000 that I ran into knew. And so I was able to go from like 1,000 to 1,200 just by feasting on other new players in end games who had no idea what was happening. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. And from what I hear, a lot of people, even, you know, in the higher ratings, are not that good at end game. A lot of people don't focus on that because I think it's not as seen as, or not seen as maybe romantic as like middle game and tactics.
All I know is I thought I was an endgame master. And then when I got to like 1200, I realized I actually don't know anything about endgames, and now I was losing all my endgames. So it's a sad cycle, Elaine. I have to keep adding more and more knowledge.
Right. There's quite a bit to learn, you know, quite a bit to learn for endgame, for sure.
I'm not yet done with Silman's complete endgame course. I'm like 3/4 of the way now.
Yeah, I hope to finish it one day.
One day. Okay, so you've got your endgame under your belt, and now you decided it's time to dive into tactics. What made you think you should do tactics?
Yeah, so it's funny. With tactics, I actually started doing them because around 1400 is when I decided to get a coach once a month. And so that really helped me in figuring out the next step. And so he worked on creating a plan for me. For, you know, my rating and, yeah, my level overall. And so that's when we decided to go over tactics. And I actually got very good at tactics because I invested quite a bit of time in practicing tactics. So I think what helped a lot is actually going over master games.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that helped a lot. And I know chess.com has these puzzles that they like a set of puzzles where they created that are just based off of master games. And you have to figure out, hey, what did this player do, right? Like, I don't know, what did Paul Murphy do or someone like that, right?
Yeah.
And it really helps you think more creatively. And you start to see these things that you didn't see before. Because when I first started them, I mean, the moves that they were making, I didn't even get them at all. I was like, wow, that's very advanced. I had no idea. But then after a while, you start to kind of see it better and you see, I guess, the idea behind it and how in-depth chess can get as well. I mean, just one move can, I guess, make all the difference. So yeah, that's when I really got into tactics and I really enjoyed it. I think my favorite part of chess is the middle game where you have most of your pieces still there and you can focus on creating this checkmate pattern, right? Maybe like an Anastasia's mate or some other mate. And so I tend to try to finish the game in middle game for that reason.
Nice. Okay. A couple questions here. So when you say you're doing tactics, are you doing like you're hitting puzzles on chess.com and doing puzzles?
So I actually am not doing as many of the specifically chess.com puzzles, but they are puzzles, but they're lessons. So it's more of like a lesson on chess.com where they have like a set of puzzles that you go over.
I don't think I've seen these. Okay,
and they get much more advanced. Much more advanced. You know, they go on for like 4, 5, 6 moves. So
it sounds like it's more of like a curated lesson involving a tactic rather than just hitting the button and getting piles of random puzzles.
Yeah, normally there's an explanation for it as well, which makes it super nice, our explanation afterwards. So I really enjoy that.
Okay. So that's where you're doing most of your tactics work is through that. And are you able to measure that at all? Like you said, you feel like you're getting it better at tactics. Do you have any way you measure your tactics?
Yeah, I mean, I think it wasn't that easy for me to measure, but then I think in a way I know that I've gotten better at tactics because in my games, I'm usually the one initiating and creating certain threats, which I wasn't able to do before. And now I can, and I know during the Over the Board tournament, I was actually able to set up these checkmate patterns because of the tactics, right? Like for my first game, I got a smothered mate, which was insane. Whoa. I mean, how do you, like, I don't even think I've gotten a smothered mate before. And so first Over the Board game, I got a smothered mate. And then I had a semi-smothered mate for another game Over the Board. And so, you know, you notice these things at times because I wouldn't be able to do this before, you know, like setting that up. That's crazy.
Was your opponent surprised they got smothered mate?
I think so. I mean, it was coming though, like for a while.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's fun. Yeah, I think one of the allures of whether it's chess.com or Lee Chess or any place else is when you just hit the button puzzles, it gives you that number, right? And you can be like, I might have lost 6 USCF rated games in a row and my number's going down, but at least my puzzle rating is going
up. Right. That's funny.
Okay. So you're not generally doing your puzzles that way, but you're saying you're seeing them in your game anyway. You can tell, you can just feel that you're getting better. You're seeing more.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I definitely think I need to do more of whatever the chess.com puzzles as well. But yeah, my focus is just right now elsewhere. I'm reading one of the chess books that I bought, and I don't know, there's a lot to study for chess, so it's difficult.
I've noticed that.
Yeah, I decided to invest some time into going over openings, and I started playing the Sicilian defense recently. It's just so complicated, so much theory.
Wow.
So I was trying to learn that, but it's like never-ending theory to me. It's just so much to remember.
What prompted you to move away from the French to the Sicilian?
So I played the French first, and then I moved to Caro Kann because it was like a better French almost. So,
okay.
But then I think what prompted me is there's more... the games are more sharp with the Sicilian. There's more tactics or more possibilities for tactics, which is what I like a lot. Because with the Caro Kann, it could kind of a lot of times end up in this like locked position where you're fighting for like one pawn or something like that.
Yeah,
so there's just
I love
not
those
as
games.
Much. You love those games? not me so much.
Yeah,
but
I'm
yes.
like, ooh, they have a backwards pawn. I'm winning. And like, what are you talking about? Those are my favorites. Okay. So you're saying you're switching your opening repertoire to kind of meet where you think you're at.
Yeah, definitely. I switched, from Italian to Queen's Gambit to the Scotch Gambit now. So I've switched from like more closed positions to open positions because I think I prefer open positions since I'm a more aggressive player. Like I said, during middle game, that is when I try to finish the game. So
what variation of the Sicilian are you playing?
The Accelerated Dragon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So people just go sack mate against you? Is that what happens?
Wait, with which one?
That was Fisher's saying against the dragon.
Uh-huh.
That's how you beat the dragon. You just go sack mate.
I mean, I'm still learning a lot with it. It's so hard. There's times where I didn't know I was not supposed to move my e pawn, and I ended up basically getting my pieces locked in because then there's nothing defending that. I think d3 square, if I'm not mistaken, and so they just sit there. So I've learned my lesson with that.
Okay,
but yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, learning new openings. I find learning new openings to be both fun and like a bottomless pit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to do it as little as I can because it's just like I look into the edge of the pit and I'm like, it's so deep. What if I just studied middle games?
Right. Right. No, it is. It's like that, especially with certain openings, like the Sicilian. So
yeah. I used to play the Nydorf. I loved the Nydorf. And then all of my opponents would just play like the Alapin. And I was like, come on, what are we doing?
That's what I would play as the Sicilian when I first started playing the Alapin. I still do. I like the Alapin. They never like that. So
yeah, I mean that's half the reason to play it. It's just to annoy Sicilian. Okay, so you are overhauling your opening repertoire right now. What kind of resources do you use to do that?
Honestly, I mean, I just go on Wikipedia and YouTube at the moment. I thought
Wikipedia?
Maybe, yeah, because Wikipedia will have, a good detailed explanation of the different variations. And so I kind of go on there, and if there's anything that looks interesting, I'll go YouTube it or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that helps me a lot.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Are there any YouTubers specifically that you tend to gravitate towards for openings?
Yeah, Hanging Pawns.
I
watch a lot
yes.
of videos. Yeah.
Steppen. I've tried to get him on this podcast. He's never responded to an email that I've sent him.
Oh,
so
no.
I don't know if he's like not interested or he's just too busy doing his thing because he's crushing it.
Honestly, it could be anything, but yeah, he is crushing it.
Yeah, he is. His videos, but his videos. Like, you better be ready. Like, when I watch his videos, I have, like, a notebook. Like, I'm in
Same.
school.
Yeah. I try to take notes now too in flashcards because I find that I forget a lot of things, especially when you're studying so many things. If you're just trying to listen and that's it, I have to write it down and then just review it later, or, you know, go through it over and over because I'm just going to forget it.
Yeah, me too. Do you use things like Lee Chess Studies to keep track of your repertoire, or are you just kind of like putting them on note cards and remembering them?
Basically just note cards right now.
Ooh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I would recommend looking into using Lee Chess Studies. It's very simple, and it's a great way to keep your repertoire sort of organized. And then when you go over something, it's there, and you can like make little notes in it. It's just a really handy tool.
All right. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. I would recommend ChessBase, but ChessBase is like a monstrous beast that's impossible to tame.
Interesting.
I have ChessBase, and I'm keeping like, no, I don't think I'm up for ChessBase today.
Yeah, I've never heard of ChessBase, so
that's like what the professionals use, right?
Okay. And yeah.
I'm not a professional, so I need to just keep reminding myself. You're not a professional, Kevin. Just
yeah, you don't need such a complex tool. Right.
Yeah, and they're wonderful. Okay, so you're working on your opening repertoire. You said you got a coach. What prompted you to get a coach? It sounds like you have this rapid improvement. Mm-hmm. What made you think like, I think a coach would actually help?
Because I think that I, you know, at that point I was pretty committed to improving, and the idea of getting a coach, I think the main reason for it was because I was hitting this point where there were so many different directions to go, so many things to study. It was overwhelming. I was thinking, where do I even go? Do I study middle game, end game, openings? What do I do? You know, there's just so much because it's just, it gets so complicated. You know, you have those three things, but then you have tactics and strategy and then a bunch of theory to go over the different variations for openings. And I didn't know where I should be putting my attention, I guess. And I thought that if, you know, I got a coach, they could help me with that because that's kind of what they do, right? So that was the main reason I got a coach, because I just started feeling kind of overwhelmed with, I guess, the direction I had to take.
Yeah.
And it did help me tremendously.
How did you guys decide what direction to take then? Did you go over your games, or how'd that work?
Yeah, I think we reviewed games firstly and then went from there. And I think because I was a newer player too, you know, he wanted to introduce me to different checkmate patterns because that's super important. That's, you know, one of the things that when you get into chess, you have to learn, right? You have to know how to checkmate. That's the whole idea behind chess, essentially, right? Checkmating. So that's how we got into it. And started off with, you know, just reviewing the different checkmate patterns and then going more in depth to them and figuring out how you can positionally like set it up as well, right? Because you'll have different checkmates based on your position. And so that is what we did. We went through the Anastasia's mate, smothered mate, semi-smothered mate, a few others, I think, as well. And I think we went over those three mostly because of the knight. The knight is like a very good piece to use to checkmate because it can jump around things. And so, yeah, I think that's why we looked at those mates specifically.
That's cool. Okay. And then your coach sort of laid out for you the steps that he thought you should take when you weren't in your lessons.
Yeah. So he just gave me homework to go over, different puzzles, you know, exercises, games to review. And I did that.
And how'd you pick a coach? Did you use some resource? Did someone recommend someone to you?
So I picked the coach off of chess.com, actually. They have, I think, like a page for coaches. Mm-hmm. And then I went with somebody who has been teaching for a long time because I figured if they've been teaching for a long time, they're probably good at it, you know? So that was literally what I did. And it was more of like a, you know, a test in a way, like, let's see how this goes. You know, if I don't like it, I can always find someone else. But
nice.
He was great, and you know, he's still my coach right now, so yeah.
Okay,
so
that's
it
great.
Worked out.
I think that's a good attitude. It's I think it can be tempting to say this person must be great, and if it's not working out, I am the problem. And I think it's just important, like any relationship, that person might be great, but maybe you're not a good match, right?
Right, exactly.
Find a good match for you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sounds like you got lucky and your first coach was a great match. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are we doing now then? So you went from like
uh-huh.
basics of not blundering to getting some basic end games and crushing people by simplifying. Yeah. Then we started getting more complicated, moving into tactics. Then we broadened our repertoire to kind of match our tactical desires. And where are we today? Are we in this? Are we still working on that, or have we done something else now?
Yeah. So, I'm going more into strategy now with my coach. So strategy is actually, I think, one of my I guess strengths in chess, because I do always have a long-term plan. And I don't know if it's a strength, because I think that there's two types of people usually, right? Bigger picture people and very detailed people. And I always wonder this. I don't know if you're a bigger picture kind of person, you'll be better at strategy, and versus like somebody who's more detailed, that you'll be better at tactics because you'll notice the little things, right? Like the short-term things. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I always kind of saw it like that. And that's kind of why I wanted to go over tactics as well, because I'm not very detail oriented, to be honest. But yeah, right now we're going over strategy, which I don't mind going more in depth into strategy, seeing if there's anything I'm still weak in. So I'm doing that with my coach, but on the side, I'm also going over a different master games, basically. So I'm reading the Mikhail Tal book. I don't know if I said his last name right. I'm going over his book right now, and I wanted to review the games because I wanted to see if there's any, you know, ideas
there's ideas
that I can pick up. Any ideas I can pick up from somebody, you know, who
That's
is considered
cool.
possibly one of the greatest players, you know, so or is one of the greatest players. So I think that's the direction I'm going. And now just actually going over different great players throughout the generations and seeing if there's anything that I can learn from them.
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea. How do you go over games? Do you set them up on a board and go over them? Do you do it on stream? Do you spend like 10 minutes per game? Do you spend an hour per game? Like, what's your process like?
Yeah, so I'll do it on stream, but I'm trying to set it up over the board as well, because I want to get comfortable over the board. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to do the over the board tournament as well, because it's different playing online versus, you know, in real life.
Yeah.
And I think it's good to, I guess, be good at both. And I actually really like playing over the board, surprisingly. I think I might like it more than just online, because the calculating part is actually more fun for whatever reason when you actually have the pieces in front of you. I don't know why.
Okay,
but I enjoy it more, you know? And so I'm trying to set up like a board, you know, an actual physical board as well, and go over the games, because I think that I can see more things when it's right in front of me as well. So
okay. And do you spend a long time in each game? Are you trying to like guess moves, or you're just kind of quickly going through them to absorb like the ideas and features of the game?
I think up to now I was going through them quickly, but I want to start actually taking my time and thinking about what I would do in that situation as well before, I guess, making the move or moving on to the next move as well. I think that that would be pretty beneficial in helping me improve. So, and, you know, to try to figure out maybe the difference in thinking as well, if there's, I don't know, if there's certain things I'm missing that would be necessary for me to improve in chess as well. So yeah, I guess maybe even comparing my gameplay to master gameplay is going to be important.
Yeah, I love doing that. It's more time consuming, but it is so revealing, as you're like, what? I wouldn't even, that wouldn't, like, I had 8 candidate moves. That was not one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't.
Exactly. Yeah.
I went through a lot of Karpov games on stream like that, and it really changed my ability to play positionally. Just going over like 60, 70 Karpov games. Seeing these really, like, even the end, sometimes the engine is like, that was not the best move. And I'm like, engine, I don't care. That was a cool idea that I'd never seen before.
Right.
So, yeah, I feel like I learned a ton just trying to guess the moves and seeing where I went wrong.
So how do you think it helped you positionally or change your gameplay positionally?
I'd say the biggest way it helped me was it gave me a wider array of candidate moves, which allows me to solve problems in different ways that I would have.
Right.
An example that I've used before is like having your bishop that's already developed and realizing that the best square for it is actually to bring it all the way back to F1. Like you've already connected your rooks, so it's not in the way of the rooks, but it just looks weird. You're like, I'm really going to bring it all the way back. But it's like, yeah, now they can't attack it. It's still covering the same diagonal. Yeah. It's just like when I first came across that move, like the first three times I was like, that move's ridiculous. And then like the fifth time I was like, wait, I bet he goes bishop F1. And then he did. And I was so excited. And then the engine was like, that move's not good. And I was like, come on, engine.
Oh, that's funny. I love doing that with my bishops too, though. I love having it in the back rank when the rooks are connected, because it's more difficult to see, and obviously it covers like that one specific diagonal it's attacking very well. My only problem, I've learned my lesson with this specifically, when you have your bishop in the back ring, if they have the same color bishop, they can force exchanges. So you always have to be careful of that. Like, that's something I've ran into a few times. I'm like, okay, this is not good. How do I stop that from happening? And, you know, the only thing the only solution right now I thought of instantly was just making sure they don't have the same colored bishop, or maybe making sure they cannot exchange it no matter what, you know, by defending that bishop. I don't know, but I do love doing that. I think that's it's always fun.
Yeah, just the little things, right? That's the thing. Like reading master games, you're not gonna, well, hope if you're at a low enough level, you will learn to like put a pawn on e4 and control the center, and that's great. But once you get past that and you get to that position where you're kind of like, okay, I developed all my pieces, there's no tactics, now what? That's where going over master games really helps, because it gives you an idea of like, this is what masters are doing. And it just puts those ideas in your head. And you're like, okay, yeah, I remember. I saw it wasn't the same position, but it was the same idea. And they just went like rook b3 here. And it seems like it would work here. So just little things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And that probably helps a lot, you know, getting a title as well, I'm assuming. So,
I don't know anything about that. those are far distant goals and dreams for me. I don't know about for you. If you keep improving, though, like 600 points every couple months, you'll have a title soon.
I mean, my goal is to get a title. So I don't know, you know, I don't know how long it will take to happen. But I do think it will happen if I just continue putting in the work and effort. I don't think it's going to be easy at all. I mean, it hasn't been easy so far. Chess can be very, very, don't know the right word, but it can be very hard to like deal with at times when you're on losing streaks. It makes you feel very, very dumb a lot of times. And that could put people down a lot too, you know? It's like, why would I make that move? You know, I'm so stupid. I feel that way a lot. Game. Yeah. Just
the idea that you can be it. I have a friend who's like 800 at chess. And this is what he told me one day. He's like, I feel like chess is like this. If you were playing basketball and you were winning 80-0, and then someone could make a shot that was worth like 90 points, that doesn't exist in any game other than chess. It makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's how chess is. And that's why it could be so hard to deal with at times. I mean, that happened to me with one of my games over the board. Exactly that happened, right? I basically was completely winning, but because I'm not used to over the board, punching in the clock, writing the moves down, forgot to punch in the clock. Oh. And so the second day, I was in line for first place, and I was playing against another player who was also undefeated that day. And I was playing the Caro-Kann. I had the whole center at that point. But because I forgot to punch in the clock, I was running out of time and I started panicking, and I made a move, a very rush move, that cost me the whole game. And he ended up getting first place that day. And that was supposed to be my first place. That's the only game I lost. And that was very defeating in a way. Wow. That sucked. And it was streamed too. And, you know, it was hard to watch. So, So I've learned, you know, I've learned my lesson from there on. But like, I think that it's something you have to accept with chess more than anything, that you're going to have games where you feel that you should not have lost it. You did not deserve to lose it because it's exactly what you just described, right? It's like that, making that one shot after missing all your shots and then just winning the game because of that. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's very ridiculous, but that's just how chess is. So
yeah, that's, it feels terrible sometimes. I was at Coffee Chess this weekend. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's a YouTube video thing, but they are actually in LA, and I brought my parents, and Boston Mike was playing, and he's like the biggest trash talker. He's the entertainer. Right. And I was in line to play him next, and winner stays on, and he was crushing his opponent. It wasn't even close, but his opponent lined up a very basic mate in one down like three pieces. And Mike grabs a different piece. And I thought he was messing with them. And he's like, you think you can mate me like that? You can't mate me like that. And then he just like plays a random move and gets mated in one. And I was like, what? My parents were waiting to see you trash talk me off like that. My mom doesn't even play chess. And she's like, how did he lose? Look at how many pieces he has.
What does he? Yeah, no, that's. That sounds like chess, though. You're not careful.
Yeah. My parents were also surprised how bad I was. That was kind of funny.
Wait, what?
Like people who play here are really good, and I lost several games. And they were like, I thought with all the time you spent on chess, you would be better. I'm like, yeah, you would think so. Thank you for the
commentary. Yeah, chess doesn't work that way, though, you know? Because those people are probably spending as much, if not more. So, you know, it's the competition is rough. That's very rough.
Yeah, that's what people don't understand. My coworkers will ask me, like, how much time a week do you spend playing chess? And I'm like, at least 10 hours and then scaling up from there. And they're like, so how come you're not the world champion then? And I'm like, well, other people spend like 6 hours a day.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So,
yeah, it can be hard.
It's crazy. It's crazy out there.
Okay. Let's dive into this tournament. Was that tournament, the National Open, was that the first big tournament you attended?
That was the first ever tournament I attended, actually.
Oh, wow. Even better. So what made you think it's time to leave this stream behind and go to a big tournament and play for real over the board?
Yeah.
What made you think that that was the time to do it?
Well, I actually ended up streaming all the games on the tournament, you know?
That's true.
Oh, actually, one of my friends told me about the tournament going on and at the chess festival, and it was very last minute, actually. And you know, it was costly too to go stay at the hotel, pay for the tournament, and to fly there as well. And so ended up creating like a fundraiser, I guess, goal on stream, and we reached it within 2 days.
That's awesome.
For the whole tournament to make it happen and to stream it as well. And so, I don't know, it just kind of worked out for that reason. I was able to go to this festival last minute, like 5 days. I bought the ticket 5 days before the tournament, basically. So it's very, very last minute. And I mean, I wanted to play over the board already because I wanted to get an actual rating, because I wanted to get a title, right? And the first step to that is, I don't know, maybe play over the board and get a rating, you know? So, this just kind of worked out because this festival is big, you know? And so I thought that it was a good festival or tournament to play like in for the first time.
Yeah. What made you choose that instead of like, say, like a local small tournament with just, you know, a handful of people?
I think just because of the size of it, and because there's more going on there, and also, you know, it's a bigger event and I wanted to stream it. So it seemed like a good event to stream.
Yeah.
So I think that was mainly the reason. And they had a beginner section. So beginner section is nice, especially for me, since it was my first time ever playing over the board. So I really enjoyed the beginner section, the unrated section.
That's cool.
For that reason,
I guess let's start with, like, what was your prep before you went to the tournament? Did you do any like specific tournament prep to make you feel like you would be more prepared to do this?
Yeah, so because it was so last minute, I barely had time to prep anything. In fact, I went to our local chess club to practice playing over the board before I went to the tournament, and it went bad. I couldn't see anything. The
Yep.
board, my board vision was so bad. And so I was thinking, crap, I'm not gonna do well on, especially the first day. Maybe the second day I'll get used to it. But it's kind of how it went, actually. The first day, I think I lost one game the first day because my vision was just so bad. But I was able to hold it for most of the games. But, there was no, I don't know, there was, actually, I take that back. I think I surprisingly calculated pretty well, even for the first day, but I couldn't calculate as far as I could online or the second day. The second day, I got pretty good over the board and I was able to calculate far, but the first day I had to take it a little bit slow because the board was just so, it felt so weird. I just couldn't see things on it.
Yeah.
Because I'm so not used to over the board.
It
so I
sounds
did
like
not
it
have.
Was a really good idea to go to the club, though, locally at least, and get a little experience. Because if that was day one, you might have been like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it was rough for sure. I mean, I was, at the club, I was basically losing my games because I wasn't able to like create mating nets, even though I was winning. Because I wasn't able to create mating nets, I was losing to time because I just couldn't envision like the squares and where my pieces are, what they're covering. It was very weird. But luckily and fortunately, I got pretty good at doing that on the second day of the tournament. I was worried it would take longer. Because I was thinking maybe this whole tournament I just won't be able to see the board well. But luckily it wasn't like that.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. It usually takes people, I found, a couple games, and then something happens in the brain and it's like, okay, all right, I can take all this information I know and just shift it a little.
I think that's exactly what happened with me. After a few games, I was good.
Okay. Yeah, so I think good advice for anyone thinking about going to their first tournament is go play locally or find a friend. Even if they barely know how to play chess, just the idea of being in front of a chessboard will help. If I haven't played for a while, I'll get my daughter to play. And she plays chess, but she's a lot lower rated than I am. Mm-hmm. But it still is helpful to get that feeling.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe like use a board that's similar to the ones in the tournaments. Because there's certain boards where I don't know what is wrong with them. You can't see anything on them. The pieces are weird. So I think maybe having a similar board that you can practice on is pretty good.
Yeah, I have like what everyone uses for tournaments, and I use that for tournaments too. And when I'm playing at home, I have this beautiful wooden board. And right before a tournament, I'll be like, all right, I'm gonna get out the cruddy set and we're gonna practice on that. So we're sort of used to
it. Yeah, since I won my last game at the tournament, I actually got to keep the board we played on. So I'll be practicing on that. I was super happy to win that board.
That's
super
awesome.
happy because I played all my games on that board since they put me on the same spot because I was streaming. So it's super nice.
Yeah, that's your
actually,
board. You played
yeah,
all
it's
your
my
games.
Board, exactly.
That's amazing.
Exactly.
Okay, I know this is going to sound insane, but this is what I think you should have done. You should have had all of your opponents sign the board afterwards. You'd have to track them all down. It might have been challenging.
You know, that would have been kind of interesting. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, it's like a vinyl board, so I don't know if like
I don't know if it would work.
The back you can sign with like a white marker. I don't know.
I don't know. It's a terrible. Maybe it's a terrible idea. I don't know.
It could work. I mean, I think with a white marker, it should work actually.
Okay.
That's funny. That's really cool though.
My last round, I drew, but I was white. And if you draw, the person was black.
That sucks. Yeah. So. Yeah. For that last game, I was running out of time. So I started rushing and I was up, I think, 3 points. And I think at the end of it, we were tied because I lost 3 pawns from playing and like rushing endgame. But it was very intense because there was a minute at that point on the clock for most of the end game for me. They had like 13 minutes and I'm just like, why does this always happen?
It
always happens. I run out of time online, over the board, it doesn't matter. And so it was crazy for that reason, because I just didn't know what would happen at that point. because I was just rushing everything, but I had two connected pawns, so it was hard to stop them in the end. Yeah. So I ended up winning.
So I guess I have a question for you. How does one go about streaming at a big tournament like that? Did you get permission from the people ahead of time? Did they put you in a special room or area?
Yeah, so I did get permission ahead of time. I actually talked with Glenn Panner. He was one of the organizers for the event, and they were super helpful. And I mean, they gave me a, or they gave all the streamers there, because I was a part of a streamer panel as well, a few different rooms to go to leave the equipment so you don't have to walk back to your room. And so that was very helpful. I was able to go in there and relax while, you know, in between my games and while I'm talking to my chat. So that was very nice. And yeah, so I think that's about it. Like, I got their permission. They gave us rooms, and they also put me on a specific spot since I was streaming the games. So that's why I mentioned earlier, they just put me in the same spot, and I just streamed from there the whole time. And so that was very helpful as well. So yeah, it went very smoothly for that reason. Everybody was just super helpful. All the staff was.
And did you have someone who sort of helped you, like, set everything up, or were you able to do it all yourself and play?
So yeah, one of my moderators actually worked on all the back end stuff with the tech stuff. So we had a server that he set up for the stream because, yeah, the Wi-Fi wasn't that good there. So it was nice having that server. And so it was very helpful for that reason, because I had somebody working on the tech stuff behind the scenes. I didn't have to worry about that. I just had to worry about, you know, the stream itself. So everything actually worked out very smoothly. The stream did not disconnect a lot, even in that big room where all the games were being held.
That's awesome.
Even though the upload speed was very bad in there. So I'm glad it worked out. Yeah, so it was very last minute, everything that I put together. But I don't know, it ended up working out very well, and I'm very happy with how it went.
Yeah, it sounds like your results were quite good as well.
Yeah. People love the games. I mean, they love the over-the-board games.
How did you end up doing in the different days? Did you play all 3 days?
I did. I took two buys in total for the first and second day. So the second day, I was 4 out of 5.
Nice.
And I think, no, wait, I'm wrong about that. I think the second day, I was 3.5 out of 4. I got one draw and I won 3 games.
Nice.
The first day, I lost one and I won 3. So 3 out of 4. And the last day, I think it was 4 out of 5. So
wow.
I think in total, I won 10 games. I lost 2 and I drew 1. So it went very well.
Yeah. So in 15 games, you lost less games than I lost in 6 games. So we had very different events.
It seems like it, but you know, yours were probably much more difficult because I was playing in the beginner section, but I don't think my rating is beginner. It was just that I'm unrated, so they put me there.
Gotcha.
So I got a little bit lucky there, and the games weren't as difficult as they would have been if, you know, I was in one of the other sections.
Sounds fun. So did you end up getting a rating then coming out, and what is it?
Yeah, I got a provisional rating. So I played 13 games and I got 1307.
1307.
Yeah,
okay,
starting
that's a
off
pretty great first rating.
Yeah, I have to play 12 more games to get my official rating, but hopefully after I play in this next tournament on Saturday, I'll be playing against higher rated people, so it'll give me, I think, a more realistic rating. Depending on if I win or lose, obviously, we'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. And what tournament is this that you're playing in?
It's a local tournament. It's nothing big. Yeah.
That's cool. Are you going to be live streaming it?
I will be, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think it would be very fascinating for me to show up at the local club and be like, I'm going to live stream this tournament. I don't know what they would do. They might be like,
I mean, if you let them know, if you email them, they'll let you know if you can stream or not.
Yeah.
And that's what I did with this tournament as well. And they told me I can stream it.
That's
so
cool.
I'll be doing that. But I don't think I would just show up because they probably would kick me out. Yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds really fun. So it sounds like you must have had a great experience at your first tournament if you're already looking to your next tournament.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a lot of fun. I wasn't expecting to be that much fun playing over the board, nor was I expecting the streams to be so entertaining playing over the board. But I went back and I watched a few of the streams, the games that I streamed at the Chess Vegas Festival, and I really enjoy them a lot. Like, I enjoy the stream itself. So I was like, I got to do this more often.
Must have been really hard for your opponent if you're just doing commentary the whole time. You're like, oh, my opponent just made a terrible move there. I don't know
no,
why.
I wasn't talking at all. So we're good.
Okay.
We're good. Yeah.
That's good. Because my daughter plays, and there's one opponent that talks during the games.
Oh, really?
Very strange. He sits there and he's thinking and he goes, oh, I have an idea. And everyone in the tournament hall is like, oh, that's great.
I didn't know you were allowed to do that. I thought you were allowed to talk. Yeah, that's where I remember them saying you can't talk.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's
surprising whenever he talks. But, you know, little kids sometimes do things like that. And
yeah, makes sense.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's cool. So you had a great tournament. You're going back to your next tournament. I guess my next question is, do you wish you had gotten out to tournaments earlier? Or do you think that was a good time for you to have waited that long?
Good question. I didn't really think about that. I mean, I think that this was a good time overall, because I kind of felt more ready. I got more serious about chess.
Okay.
And my rating, you know, wasn't complete noob at that point, right? Because I was beginner still before. I'm relatively new to being intermediate player, I think, because I think at this point I consider myself an intermediate player, not a beginner. So I think the timing was honestly pretty good, and I'm hoping to do much more over the board tournaments. So yeah, no, I think it was a good time.
Okay. And what are your next steps in chess, or what are your goals short term and long term? I know you said you want a title. I imagine that's not your next goal. Do you have any goals in between now and title?
Yeah, I think one of my goals, obviously, is to get my actual rating, not a provisional rating. So just to keep playing over the board until I get, you know, that official rating. And then I'm also hoping, obviously, to hit 1600 very soon, because I'm very close on chess.com. And then obviously work towards 1700 as well. So those are two goals I have at the moment. And obviously, I think that I want to, I want to work on making more educational videos as well to help other people who are, you know, other players who are still fairly new to chess or just beginners, because I think I have a lot of good information or advice I can share being relatively a new player myself. So I'll be working towards that as well.
Yeah, I think that's some of the most valuable content is new player content from someone who is very recently a new player, right? It can be really hard, especially like when grandmasters give that advice. Sometimes it's hilarious. It's like, you were like 8.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically two different worlds, right? If you're getting advice from somebody who's a grandmaster, sure, they're really good, but they started when they were a child versus someone who's starting as an adult. It's very different starting in as an adult for a lot of people, because you just don't have the same amount of time as when you do when you're a child as well. So I find it to be kind of different, but obviously there's still a lot of good advice that you can get from title players. But it's nice, you know, I think hearing advice from someone who's in the same boat as you.
Yeah, I think so too. I find it interesting that it sounds like most of your goals are very ratings based. And it sounds like it's probably because you are improving pretty rapidly. So it's kind of like that's the next bar to cross.
Yeah. Yeah. And I obviously, you know, I want to enjoy the game as I keep moving along and getting better. And I think that one of my goals that maybe isn't rating based would just be to become a better aggressive player. I want to get really good at attacking and initiative and checkmating middle game, because I said this before, I think at the streamer panel when I was in Vegas, but I think what makes chess a lot of fun for me is, or my favorite part of chess is being able to, you know, create these positions where I can get these pretty checkmates. That's what makes chess so fun. Those nice checkmates. Like, wow, you can look at it after. Look what I just did. Look what I, you know, I got a nice checkmate. So,
yeah, that's so funny because I almost never get checkmates. It's like, it'll be like, ah, you did get that backwards pawn. Now you're going to get a queen. I'll just resign now.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Most of my games end in like an end game where one person's king is in the wrong spot.
Really?
Yeah.
And but then somebody just resigns?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I get the... It's very rare when someone plays out to mate in like a king pawn versus king endgame. It's pretty much only 10-year-olds that I've found that do that. Just because I think their coaches have rules like you're not allowed to resign. And they're like, okay, fine. I won't resign. I
kind of set that rule for myself a little bit too. Maybe it's, you know, I think it's different when you're high rated, but when you're low rated, anything can happen. Your opponent might not know what opposition is, like you mentioned. So
yeah, they might not know any basic thing. You never know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
With my daughter, I tell her there are no rules. You can resign when you want.
Mm-hmm.
But just think about the times where you're winning and then suddenly you've given away your queen. Your opponent can do exactly the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've won games like that too where I'm completely losing, but then I find a checkmate and they don't notice it or they just blunder.
I think my proudest moment of my daughter is I was watching her game once and she was down like, I don't know, two rooks and three and two bishops and a knight or something. And she just had a bishop and her king. And she actually set up a stalemate by like putting her king in a spot and then putting her bishop in the spot, not quite forcing them to take it, but it's too tempting not to. And she first checked them a bunch of times with the bishop on purpose to annoy them so that when she finally hung it, they would instantly grab it out of excitement and then she could get a stalemate. It was very impressive because I would have resigned that easily.
Yeah, no, that's super cool.
Yeah, I was very impressed with her.
Yeah, I try to play for stalemate in positions like that too, instead of just resigning.
Why not?
But I'm just bad at resigning. I think there are times where I should be resigning, but I just don't.
Yeah, my theory is it's up to you, and it's probably better not to resign.
Right.
Who knows? Anything can happen. Well, Elena, this has been really great. It's always fun to talk to people who are newer, especially who've just played their first chess tournament, and I'm glad to hear that things went really well for you. I haven't had any guests yet who played their first chess tournament and said, it was terrible and I'll never go back.
Really?
So just remember that, viewers out there, if you're thinking, should I go to my first chess tournament? Almost certainly the answer is yeah, give it a try. You'll probably have fun.
I agree with that. It's a lot of fun. Definitely give it a try.
Well, thanks so much for coming on, Elena. Where can people get a hold of you? Where can they see your content?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, first of all. This was a lot of fun. I enjoyed having, you know, this conversation about my first over the board tournament and overall how I got into chess. But you can find me on my Twitch page. So I don't know if you want me to spell that out for you.
Yeah, go ahead and spell it out.
Yeah, so it's just twitch.tv/Elena. And you can spell that ELAYNAH. Okay. So, yeah.
There you go. Make sure you check out Elena's streams. When do you normally stream?
I stream usually 5 days a week and stream around 2 p.m. Pacific time zone, like 2 to 3 starting Pacific time zone. And I'll go for 4 to 6 hours usually from, you know, I think Wednesday to Monday.
Okay,
so 6 days.
Very different streamers, by the way. I'm terrible at streaming. I do like 1 hour and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm beat. So I always admire people who can go 4 to 6 hours. It can be
tiring. I used to do longer streams and I started cutting it because it's a lot. It takes a lot of brain power and you're sitting there talking and trying to think and play and I don't know, it ends up.
Yeah, that's for sure. Especially 30-0 games, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. If you want 30-0 games, I feel like Elena is maybe the only streamer who does 30-0 games.
I have yet to find anyone else. I really do. I don't know. Everyone does Blitz. Everyone likes Blitz. So
yeah, that's for sure. All right. Well, thank you so much for stopping by, Elena. And for all of you out there, I hope this is the week where you get your title or you gain a couple hundred points. But if it's not, and you go to a tournament and you lose most of your games and your rating drops to its all-time low, don't worry. It happens to all of us. It's part of the process. Come back next week. We'll have another guest. We'll have some more tips for you. And have a great week, everyone. See you next time.